Welcome to the Product Design Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Coolin, founder of UX Cabin, where we create world-class web and mobile apps. I'm excited to bring you a behind-the-scenes look into the lives of some of the most interesting and talented people in product design. We'll get strategic advice on how they got to where they are today and things they wish they would have known earlier in their career. Hey, hey, welcome to the Product Design Podcast. This is an interesting episode because this is the first time in our history that we have two guests simultaneously. So I want to welcome Colton and Ludovic. They are the co-founders of Kickass UX, which is a online training platform to transition to a career in UX design. So Colton and Ludovic, thank you guys so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having us. We're stoked to be here.
Yeah. So why don't we just get a little insight into who you guys are and what you do?
You first, Ludovic.
All right. Well, so I'm Ludovic. I used to be a senior UX designer, just like Colton. And together we wanted to, you know, create a new platform to help designers transition to UX. And anyway, so as designers, we recognize that we need to create a new path to help people in a different way, right? And so as senior UX designers, Colton and I spent a lot of time working on this program. And that's where we're at now. And so we're helping dozens of designers to either learn or transition to UX, which is extremely rewarding. We absolutely love it on a daily basis. It makes us super proud to see our students get confidence in their UX skills. But yeah, so I'm just going to do a quick background myself. So I was a senior UX designer at Smartsheet here in Seattle. And, you know, like the thing with UX design is that not everyone knows to get in UX. They don't know how to get in UX design, right? And that's the thing. Myself, I started my career truly in DIY. I learned by myself. I created a case study by myself, which is a bit the same as Colton, right? So we tried to find our way in the UX world, which was extremely hard, especially a few years ago. There were not that many resources online. And, you know, we had to find our way. But now we're trying to help make this much easier for people and try to, you know, deliver that deeper layer of strategy on how to actually achieve this goal. So that's where we're at.
As for me, in terms of background, I got into UX by accident. I basically, in 2013, I'd come out of school. I'd been teaching myself a bunch of graphic design stuff because I was really passionate about design. I've always been a really creative person. But I went to school initially to be an aerospace engineer. And I realized I was going to hate my life if I went down that path. And so when I came out, I was like, I went to University of Washington and there's only so much I could do to get out within 4 years. So I went with what I could do after I'd already gone down that path of engineering. So I came out with communications and political science and I didn't want to be a lawyer and I didn't want to go into politics. And so I didn't have any options. And at that time, Exploding Kittens and Cards Against Humanity were blowing up. And so I was like, I could do this. I love board games. I can build a board game. And so I built a board game from scratch and I did so using like basically going through the entire UX process without knowing it. And it was after I finished that someone was like, oh my gosh, you just did what's called UX. And I was like, what? This is the thing? And then essentially from there, I started teaching myself as much as possible. But at that time, I thoroughly believed that you had to have a degree or certificate to land a job. And so I ended up going to General Assembly. I had a decent experience. I had wonderful teachers. Overall experience we can get into later. But essentially from there, I realized that there was a problem that needed to be solved for a lot of people because essentially coming out of there, I wasn't getting any jobs or I wasn't getting any like interviews, any of that stuff until I added my case study of my board game to my portfolio. And then I started getting callbacks. But everything from the actual bootcamp itself wasn't really getting the callbacks and getting the interviews. And so I was like, there's a problem here. And so after landing a job in UX and being in there, I kept getting approached over and over and over by so many people asking me how I did it. And so around 2019-ish, I was thinking about building my own course. Found out Ludovic was planning on doing the same thing. We're like, hey, let's combine forces.
Wow. Yeah. How'd you guys meet each other?
At Smartsheet.
Okay. So you work together.
Yep.
Very cool. Very cool. And so, you know, kind of thinking about how you guys got started into UX and there not really being a clear path, I think that's probably one of the hardest things about the industry now, because it's like most of us who are in the industry fell into it either from graphic design or from front end development or from something that kind of we had our foot in the door, right? In some way or another. And I think a lot of folks who are coming into it now, they're like, okay, I need to go either get a visual communications degree, or I need to go to a boot camp, or I need to teach myself. And then at the end of that, I'll have a job. And what I see a lot of times is people will do that route, go that path. And they kind of think, as long as I just do these steps, I will have job offers at the end. And that can be a rude awakening for some folks, because it's really hard to differentiate yourself from a lot of people who are in the same position as you are. Maybe you guys can kind of give a little insight into how might someone differentiate themselves when they're at that point of they feel like they're self-taught enough, or they just graduated a degree or a certificate. What are some strategies that you guys have found that are good ways to separate yourself from the pack?
Yeah. You know, like you mentioned, you know, the UX process is very much, you know, linear in a lot of case studies, and it feels like steps one after the other. It's just, it doesn't really tell a story, right? But unfortunately, you know, in the industry, that's how people are taught. You know, they're taught that you have to start here and then you do this, and after you do this, you do something else. And it just feels like checking boxes at the end of the day, right? And from a case study standpoint, it's really hard to stand out if you do this. You pretty much have to go the other way and not just explain the what you did is extremely important, obviously, but the why behind the what is what we don't see in portfolios that much, right? Like, why did you conduct a card sorting and not something else? And that tells a better story, and it helps the hiring manager not only know what you did, but the reasoning behind why is just as critical, if not more so. And that's a way to stand out. And very few portfolios actually do this nowadays. And just by doing this, it's going to set you up for success. But that's on the case study end, right? But before we get to the case studies, the hiring manager gets on the homepage, right? And on the homepage, a lot of time we see this mistake made by designers, graphic designers, visual designers. They often make this one, which is to cast a wider net. And they think that by adding graphic design / UX / UI / you name it, right? That by adding more skills, it will be to attract a broader audience and get more jobs. And at the end of the day, what we teach our students is to do the exact opposite and to try to figure out what you actually want to position yourself as. And if it's as a UX designer, then, well, great. You know, like, you have transferable skills as a graphic designer, but you're not, you know, a graphic designer any longer. You want to become a UX designer, and that needs to be extremely clear. And so a way to stand out in terms of your offering and how you display your brand, your personal brand on your portfolio, is to very be clear and say, hey, I'm a UX designer with a background in graphic design, and I help companies to do X, Y, and Z. And I'll see it so much clearer than, hey, I can do graphic design, I can do a little bit of UX, I can be a little bit of UI. And then the hiring manager is so confused and like, can I even trust them to do any of these things well? Right.
Right. Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. Even from like just like a business standpoint, what I have found is it's really tempting to just be like, we're a full service agency. We can do all of these things, from branding to product design to landing page design to marketing design. And it's like, you think you're casting a wide net, that like you're available to more opportunities. But really what that does is it makes people say like, I kind of think you're very average at most of those things at best, rather than if you're just like,
that's right.
Like you could hone in on a lot of things with even within UX. You'd be like, I am the design systems guy, or I am the, you know, the research girl that is like going to just be like very, very excellent at these things, and, you know, kind of pinpoint yourself even further down that road. But I think the more you can niche yourself down, the more you're comfortable with that, it's generally better. And it doesn't even preclude you from other opportunities, because a lot of times be like, oh, well, hey, we need a logo. We're like, we got some people in house that used to, you know, do that type of thing. We can, you know, hook you up, like, but we're just not like presenting ourselves that way. And we're not leading with that, you know?
Yeah. You know, the metaphor I like to use with that exactly, it's a little bit morbid, but it makes perfect sense. If you had a brain tumor right? You wouldn't go to a general oncologist. You wouldn't go to a general doctor because that's not specialized enough. And you'd go to the person who specializes in it. You wouldn't go to someone who's very general. And so it's the same thing here. Like, you know, a lot of people, I put out a post in sort of Ludovic not too long ago on LinkedIn. It got some people to push it back against that saying, because we basically said, you know, really, we're not trying to hide your graphic design background, but you want to highlight your UX stuff. So put your graphic design stuff on a separate tab or put it in your about page, really whatever you want to do with that. It's up to you, but just don't include it around alongside UX case studies. And we had to push back people saying, no, you want to show everything because that way people can see your background. It's like, well, we're not saying to hide it entirely. We're saying to push it off to the side and show what you're focused on. Because if you're showing all these different things side by side, A, you're making it hard to navigate, and B, you're not helping people understand what you really want to be doing.
Yes. I think one super interesting study that I'm going to do my best to re-explain is there is a study about medicines and how they were marketed. And it was some, you know, very generic pain reliever that found that it like quadrupled its sales when they just made like four different variations that were like, it was like pain reliever for headaches, pain reliever for, you know, body aches, pain reliever. And they found like the more specific they got, the more it actually sold. And they're like, we wish we could have niched down even more and been like pain reliever for women with headaches who are over 30 or just like whatever the most they could niche down. Because when people have a problem, they want to find the most specific solution to that problem. And that's going to win over the generalized solution. Like yes. if I have sinus pain, and I'm not going to just take a general pill for like body pain relief. Right. I'm going to find as specific as possible.
And it's right, exactly. And it's so funny that, you know, we know that intuitively for many things in life, yet when it comes to our career, we just forget it. It's like, well, you know, it doesn't apply for me here. It's like, well, no, it does. And, like we said, there are many ways to niche down, and you can niche down even further. So for example, right, you can say, hey, I'm a UX designer and I have a background in graphic design. I specialize in B2B companies and I'm a mobile designer, right? Like that way, like you're just doing mobile. You're very specialized for B2B. You show your history as a graphic designer. You show who you are right now as a UX designer. And that tells a full story while niching down. And obviously you're not going to attract as many companies and as many teams, right? Because you're saying it's mobile and it's like for B2B only. But at the end of the day, you just need one job. You don't need 1,000, right? So when niching down, the cool thing that happens is that you, even though you get less in quantity, you get much more quality, much deeper quality in terms of leads, right? So that means that hiring managers seeing your profile, it will ring a bell because there are not many mobile designers. There are not many that actually are good at, you know, visual design, and it shows thanks to the graphic design history. All these things add up and it makes you very unique, and they're going to want to hire you much more than if you're super generalist like everyone else. But we tend to forget that, and we think it only applies to medicine or all the things outside of life, but not a career, right? So it's just a mind shift that needs to occur to be like, no, it's fine. If you niche down, you're not going to remove opportunities. You're just going to have less of them. But the few that you're going to get are going to be so much better at attracting your audience that it's going to be so much more worth it.
Here's the question that I know a lot of our listeners are thinking right now is, I hear what you're saying about niching down. I would like to niche down, but in everything that I've done and gone through, you know, doing research, doing design, doing whatever, I don't really know what I like best. I kind of like a lot of it. I like research. I like the, you know, systems approach to design. I don't know what I want to niche down into. And all of the projects are kind of general where I've done this generalized approach to it. How do you find your niche, or what's your strategy if up until this point, you just have a very general background?
So there's a couple of different ways to do that. So we define the UX process as four stages. I know that like we just get more specific with the way that we call them. So we call the first one research and understanding, information architecture and wireframing, prototyping and usability testing, and then digital design handoff. So at each of those four stages, essentially what we recommend for our students, and we have them do this in our program, is we have them rate their confidence level in each of those stages. Like, so how confident do you feel? But that doesn't mean necessarily that's the thing that you're passionate about. So then they also rate themselves in passion. Like, where are they most passionate in that? And so by doing that, you're not only able to see where you feel strongest, but also you're able to see what you want to be doing more of. And so you can really point your ship in that direction based on what you learn from that. And the other side of that is, I mean, like, first of all, we also very much believe in being like a UX generalist where you own the process from start to finish. Like, I very much believe in that. And the biggest reason for that is because then you own the process from start to finish. You have an impact from start to finish, and you know why you're doing everything you're doing from start to finish. And so, like, I know some people really push back against that, saying it's impossible to be able to do all these things and be great at them. It's like, well, I know almost all of my friends in the design industry do everything. They're all generalists and they're all excellent at what they do. Yes, they're better at certain parts than others, but they're all excellent at what they do. And so really when I'm saying, like, when we have our students do this, even though they are pushing to be generalists, like across the board, like US generalists that can do everything, they are learning where they're most passionate and where their strengths are so that they can talk about those strengths whenever they're having an interview with the hiring manager. But like, so that's the niching down in terms of like your own skill set where you want to be doing things. But the other side of that, kind of like what Ludovic was talking about, like B2B or whatever, is like really thinking about what companies you want to work for and like what types of industries, what types of companies. Maybe you're really passionate about food. And so you really only want to work for a company that deals with food in some way. Maybe you're really passionate about the automotive industry. Maybe you're really passionate about the environment. Like, there's so many different things, right? There's infinite options there. So essentially what you do is whatever companies you want to work for, whatever industries, whatever, like make a list of all of your top, I don't know, like 5 to 10 companies you want to work for. And then make a list of 2 to 3 competitors each. And then essentially what you'll do is go through and pick case studies from there to then recreate for these companies. And like, and this is, of course, if you have the time, that's like, or you're going through a program or whatever, this is what we recommend for all of our students to make their case studies. Because a lot of times one of the problems that students have or people trying to break in have is that they're not standing out because the case studies aren't that great. And they're not getting honest feedback from mentors along the way that it really doesn't reflect the best process. It doesn't actually show their skills that well. And it's not a realistic scenario. Like, so many times I see hiring managers talk about how they just saw a portfolio where someone just redesigned something just for the sake of it. Like, that's not what UX is about. You don't do something because you want to do it. You do it because like that's what users are asking for. That's what needs to happen. There's a problem there. And so you're solving a problem, both a user and a business problem, actually doing that. And so in terms of niching down, if you actually start solving problems for the niche that you want to work in, and you can show that on your portfolio, in your case studies, like that plus your statement up above that we just talked about, you know, how my name is Mark, I do these things for these types of companies. Like, it then raises your ability to get in so much faster because like you're actually showing that you can do the work and you're showing that you have prior knowledge of these industries that actually can apply to that company right now. They don't have to train you as much. I mean, of course, they're going to have to train you, but they don't train you as much. And that's what you're really trying to help companies do, is you're trying to help them get you going as fast as possible without them having to put as much effort into you before you even get there.
Yeah, that's great. That's really, really helpful. I'm thinking, you know, also of another question that you guys might be able to answer is like, let's say someone has, they're building their portfolio, they've done some different projects, but they've all been like really low level, like making a website for your band or your local coffee shop. And you're doing the UX process, you're doing all of these things, but you really want to work on B2B mobile apps, or you know what you want to do, but you just don't haven't had the opportunity to do those things and get those clients to do those case studies or have that experience. What's your recommendation for getting the opportunity to build the right case studies?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, right? Because you're giving an example of someone who is all the way at the end and they have the portfolio, they have the case studies and all that stuff. But ideally, right, in an ideal scenario, like what Colton just talked about is like right at the beginning before any of this stuff is done, right? Which means that you can actually strategize and think to yourself, project yourself in the future and be like, all right, what kind of UX designer do I want to be? What's my specialty going to be like? Do I want to be more of a mobile designer, more of a desktop designer, more of a generalist? Do I want to work for a specific type of industry? Do I want to work for specific companies, right? And that helps to shift around and to help to ideate on, all right, what is my KC going to look like so that it attracts then that audience all the way at the end, right? So one of the things that we stress with our students for sure is to understand all of these levers and all of these things that seem insignificant to think about so early in the process, but actually will yield great results in the end because you went through that process of thinking way ahead of time. And then it's not like at the end, you're like, oh my gosh, I create these cases, but I don't care about these industries whatsoever. And now I have to look for a real job. I'm like, oh my, I can't use this. And so you feel this weird thing where it's like, my cases are kind of useless for the type of audience I'm trying to attract. It just shows my UX process, all these things, but it's like everyone else, right? And so that's the thing. So ideally, all the way right when you start, before you did any of the work, need to have this in mind and know exactly what you're going to be shooting for in a few months from now so that it can help inform what you're doing now, right? But in the case of someone who went through that path and created all these case studies already and they don't really relate to the type of industry they want to work for, right? What do you do in that scenario? Well, this is tricky, right? So you can think in different ways, but if you really want to work in an industry that is not displayed in your portfolio in any way, you can always give it a try, right? It's not going to take too long. You can just give it a few weeks, 2 weeks, try to apply, see if it works, see if you get any bites. And in the meantime, if it were me, what I would do is that I would work on a third case study or fourth, depending on how many they already have, and just, you know, take the paint, go through it and say, you know, I'm going to take a few weeks, like 6 weeks. I'm going to do another case study to display very specific UX skills in that specific industry and place that as the top case study, the first one on the portfolio homepage so that it actually attracts that audience. But yeah, like ideally, like I said, it's very much like you need to think about this upfront. And if you don't, like it's going to be a harder battle. There's still ways to mitigate that, but it's going to take extra effort. Yeah.
So would you recommend, you know, if you're trying to do this proverbial case study, going through the process of doing some sort of like non-paid, even fake version of a case study where you can flex some of these skills? Or do you guys think that you would always need some sort of, you know, committed opportunity where you are actually doing actual work on a case study?
Yeah, you don't need to commit an opportunity. Like the thing that I tell people and I always tell people is like, you create your opportunity, like do the work before you actually have the job. And that's what will help you like the job. And so it doesn't matter if someone's paying you necessarily. There are stakeholders that helps because then that becomes part of the story that you tell. Because a big part of what hiring managers and recruiters want to see is the fact that you have done things from start to finish and you've been able to hand off your designs to developers. How did you work with others? That's something they're trying to answer. And when you haven't worked with others, then it's hard to answer that question. But the point is you can still point to the work that you've done and say, hey, look, I have actually taken this from start to finish. Here's my final result. Here are the things that I learned. Here's the story along the way. And so like, I firmly believe that you can create your own experience that is very highly applicable and you don't need to commit an opportunity. And like, there are other ways, like there's like Tech Fleet with Morgan and like, you know, they're creating apprenticeships for people who are coming out of bootcamps or have the skills that they just don't have the experience yet. So there's other places that are coming out with apprenticeships that essentially allow people to build those skills. But it's more of have the story working with the team. So that's the thing that when you do on your own, you're missing out.
A quick thing that I wanted to add on what I said earlier is like, well, if you need to add an extra case study because you were trained to target a specific industry, well, you probably don't have too much time either, right? You probably want to do it very quickly, probably like 6 to 8 weeks max. And in order to do this, you know, there are things that can help you. So for example, if you try to tackle a product or an industry in which it will be super hard for you to find participants for your user interviews, your usability tests, you're going to have a much harder time recruiting, right? And so also think way ahead of time. It's like, well, all right, so I want to work on this thing, but how easy or difficult is it going to be for me to find those participants, because recruiting is one of the hardest things. It takes time. And if on top of that, it's such a niche product or such a niche industry that is going to narrow your options down, then that can add an extra week or two on the schedule. And so that's always something to keep in mind. And, you know, like, are you familiar enough with that market so that you don't have to do a deep dive into it, you know, not take, you know, a week or so to learn about, you know, the business opportunities, all these things that, like, do you already know enough about it so that you can get started? And if so, then you're going to have a much easier time at ramping up and doing this thing in actually 6 weeks versus doing it in 9 or 10, right? Which can make a difference. So there are also strategies that you can use to kind of ensure that, you know, like, things are going to be as smooth as possible. Obviously, it's the UX process, so it's never super smooth, but, you know, like, to the best of your abilities, there are things that can be done, right?
Yeah, that's great. You know, there's lots of different paths into UX, and wondering if you guys could kind of just talk about the pros and cons of each, maybe who might be cut out for each different sort of path, and then maybe a little bit at the end kind of speak to what your program does to, you know, hopefully be the who it's targeting and what its unique position in the marketplace is.
Totally. So there's three primary paths that people take to get into UX. And somewhat fairly obvious, but it's unclear about what's the right one for you. We actually have a pretty long article about, like, helping you choose that for yourself. But essentially, it's the university route, the bootcamp route, or doing it yourself. Those are three different options. So the university route, the pros are, you know, it's really for people who are great in living in a classroom setting. You have very structured learning. They're providing you a lot of different resources. Depending on the program, some of them have you work on your own project that you really care about that actually will help you learn the process and build something that's unique to you, which is really neat. So for example, I'm pretty sure, like, the University of Washington HCDE program, which is really, it's a master's program, they help you do that, which is really great. The cons are, a lot of times it's very much, like, theory-based, and you don't get as much action, like, you know, you're actually doing the thing to learn, which isn't great. It's tens of thousands of dollars. Most programs for UX are like 40 grand up to 100 grand. And like an HCD program, I'm pretty sure it's like $43,000 or $45,000, give or take a few $100 here and there. You know, Carnegie Mellon, I want to say it's like 86,000 or 92. I forget exactly how much it is. Point is, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money you're putting into something that you don't even know if you're going to get a job afterwards. Like, because there's so many people coming out. That is the biggest con, I think, of universities. And most, I mean, there are part-time programs that you can take, but essentially it's usually a lot less flexible in terms of what you have available to you if you have a job currently. So there's definitely some negatives there, but it really depends on the way you work and how you learn. If that's the right move for you, then, like, by all means. Oh, one last con about universities. A lot of times people teaching the programs haven't been in the field for very long, or they haven't been in for a long time. And so that's actually usually more of the case where people haven't been in, like, and so they haven't been working or actually getting real experience for a while. So they're teaching based on theory and not on their own personal experience. And so with that, they don't have solid mentorship where people are saying, hey, this isn't how it would go, or, you know, or providing real honest feedback to students because they don't have that expertise because they haven't practiced it on their own. So that's the pros and cons of the university. As for boot camps, the pros are you learn a lot really, really fast. So it's like, you know, those range anywhere from like 2 months at the minimum for like a decent boot camp. I'd say 2 months is like really pushing it. Like, it's not enough time really to learn a lot, depending on what they're aiming for, but 2 months to like a year in length. So faster timeline, significantly cheaper than the university. Those are definitely the big pros. The cons is you learn a breadth of knowledge, but you don't learn the depth of knowledge a lot of times, where you don't learn the why behind it. And this is where you have the issues that come out of boot camps. People talk about where people can't speak to their process. They can't speak to why they did something. It's because they know what they did and they were told what to do, but they don't know why. The other big problem with boot camps, what depends on the boot camp, is mentorship. Like, you can either have a really fantastic mentor or you could have a really bad. It really depends. And so, like, to build our program, we actually interviewed, gosh, at this point it's in the hundreds, but when we first started, we interviewed around 60 plus people that went through boot camps, university programs. Anyway, so what we found was we talked to, probably 30 plus people who went through boot camps. And some people had great experiences. People had really bad experiences from the exact same boot camp. And it was because of the mentors they had and the way they perceived the program. Because some of the boot camps, like, don't even get into names on which, but like, don't actually have their own content. They actually use, like, they send people to Medium articles and YouTube videos and different places like that, rather than actually teaching them from their own content. And like, this program, I think it was like $12,000. And you're sending people to other content, like, that feels like you're swindling people. And so like, people had a bad experience from that side of things with that boot camp in particular. But mentorship is really the big one, for like the big hit or miss. And then the other really big con for boot camps is the fact that most people come out with pre-canned projects. So like, it's a great method to learn when you're working on a predefined project that's already been figured out in terms of like the scope and what you're doing and whatnot. And so like, that's great. We have one of those for like a really basic course that we have, but it's not the boot, like that's not a program. We don't do that for. But so it's a great learning tool because you have everything figured out with that. You know what the scope is. You know what you have to do. But the problem is when you're done with these boot camps, a lot of times you have 2 to 4 projects that everyone else from your cohort and everyone else from the boot camp has in their portfolio as well. And so because of that, well, you can't show off your skills as being unique, or you can't show off what you did. What's your contribution? What's different than everyone else? How did you think about this? What was your process that's related to just you? You can't speak to that. Yeah. And then I'm sure I'm missing a few other things in there. Like the positives, though, that do come up from boot camps that I did miss is you do have usually build pretty good bonds with other people in your cohort. Like most people have, like that's why they did, like when we talk to people, one of the number one reasons why they did it was for the networking community aspect. And like most people absolutely love that. They walk away and they're stoked on that part of it. And so that is one of the definite positives of boot camps. And there are some boot camps where you do walk away with your own project that's entirely your own. I think General Assembly recently switched to doing that for their third project. I don't know how they run it. I can't speak to the quality of that. But anyway, then the last way of getting in is doing it yourself. And so this is by far, obviously the cheapest, but it's also the most challenging by a long shot, because you're not getting mentorship unless you're using services like ADP List, or you're finding someone that you already know or through LinkedIn to actually have as a consistent mentor. And I would say it's important to have a consistent mentor, not a bunch of different mentors, because you're going to hear different things from different people. Like, it's okay to have 2 or 3 different mentors if they're consistent, but just don't randomly hop from one person to another. It's not going to be very helpful. But yeah, with doing it yourself, obviously pro is super cheap. That, I think, is the biggest pro. After that, it kind of goes downhill from there, because really it's a lot of things to overcome. Like, don't get me wrong, we tell all our prospective students who come our way, like, look, just so you know, you can do this on your own. Like, we don't want to like push you into something that wouldn't be right for you. If you feel like you can do this on your own, like, by all means, what we help you do is shortcut that process, get feedback from people who know what they're talking about, and like learn the stuff that you need to know so you can get through this. But anyway, back to the doing it yourself, like essentially the number one thing I tell people to do is find consistent mentorship up front, so they can make sure they get through, build an accountability system. So like, whether that's with your mentor or someone else, your accountability partner. And then the other piece would be to go through what we talked about before, like choose the companies you want to do case studies on now. And that way you can work on those. And that way, what you're actually building towards, because like, essentially, you have to piece together everything. You have to figure out what resources to trust. How do you know that you're doing things right? There's so many conflicting resources out there about what UX is, let alone what methods to use. So like, one of the resources was the book About Face by Alan Cooper. Like, that to me is the UX Bible. You're going to go on your own, at least start by reading this, and then use that as a foundation to keep moving forward. And like, yeah, there are plenty of cheap UX courses out there. I can't speak to them. And a lot of times people who do it themselves find these cheaper self-paced courses and go through that and then follow that. So like, a classic one that people think is a good one is the Google UX certificate. What we always tell people is that's a great foundation. Like, it provides a really solid foundation, but it's not enough to land a job by any means. Like, it'll help you understand the basics and what to do next, but then need to go produce your own case studies. But yeah, then like the problem again is you're not going to keep that portfolio along the way, so you don't know how that's going to look. Those are the cons. Like doing it yourself though does, like when you do it, Ludovic did it, like it makes you like, you'll feel really, really rewarded at the end for all the work that you put in when you actually land the job. It's just a much longer process because you're not getting feedback as quickly along the way.
Right. You always wonder, like, am I doing things right? Am I messing things up here? And it's just like, oh, I mean, you know, back when I transitioned to UX, ADP list wasn't a thing. At least you can find nowadays a lot of mentors. But like Colton said, you know, it's like at the end of the day, there is a huge difference between consistent mentorship from one person that knows your history, knows your trajectory, your goals over the long term, or, you know, like over a course of several weeks, versus some mentorship that keeps, you know, coming in and out and in and out from different people. They will just give you a bunch of different data, and then it might make you actually more confused than if you just went on your own, weirdly enough. But it can give you some good pointers, but from an imposter syndrome standpoint, you might feel like, it might feel uneasy to get some very different feedback from very different people, right? And so because you're not confident in your skills yet, that can be tricky. But yeah, at the end of the day, DIY is extremely hard. It's still possible. There is a lot of knowledge on the internet. There are a lot of articles that you can read, a lot of books you can get. But, you know, you're going to have to spend the time figuring out, am I doing things right or not? And trying to cross different types of resources to figure this out. I'm not even talking about the fact that a lot of resources online are very contradictory on on the same exact topic. It's like, well, you know, when you don't even know what you're doing, it's like, who should I even trust? You know, so that can be very confusing. So do DIY if you maybe have access to a consistent mentor, maybe someone who works in the UX industry, a friend of yours, someone who's willing to spend weeks and weeks and weeks with you. Otherwise, it's going to be hard. And for people who want to jump into a university program, it's very much try to figure out how much actual practice you're going to get out of this versus just the theory. And for boot camps, it's very much like, can I know who's going to be my mentor before I actually pay a dime, right? Because we heard too many horror stories of, you know, spending 10 to 15K on a boot camp only to get with a mentor that is not that great, right? Obviously, sometimes it works out perfectly. And that's why I'm saying, like, if you can figure it out before you actually spend the money, like, who's going to be mentoring me? Do they know what they're talking about? Are they passionate about teaching things? All these things really matter and can change the experience dramatically, right? So yeah, these are the pointers. And, you know, like, all three options are great. All three options have their pros and cons. And, like, seriously, like, I've done DIY and I got a job this way. Colton did a mix of bootcamp and DIY and he got in this way. We know people went through university program, they got in this way. I mean, it all depends on your preferences, how much time you want to spend on this and how much money you want to dedicate towards that goal, right? But, you know, it's possible, but it's more competitive nowadays. So you better be very strategic about how you approach this.
Yeah, I also think on like the DIY side of things is you kind of have to, I think there's a really good mindset to have if you wanted to go into it from that perspective. Don't think of it in terms of like, I'm going to go away and study for months and months and months and months and then try to jump off the cliff to get that full-time job. Because there's a lot of like groundwork that might not lead to anything. But I would say if you have a particular thing in mind that got you into UX, like you want to build a product or you are willing to, you know, try to sell your time for really low cost to get that experience and to actually do the work, like there's a huge market of people who are willing to pay hundreds of dollars for sites or, you know, a few thousand dollars for small scale mockups that they would never go to an agency for because they're not going to pay the hundreds of dollars an hour for those rates. And if you could actually like start doing the job, start learning, start getting paid, maybe you get paid $10 an hour to build a local website for a company, or you and your friends want to build an app and you want to just put time into actually building it. Or you can go on Upwork and you can say like, hey, I'm junior. I'm just learning this. Maybe I just took an introductory course. I'll be willing to work with you. I'll go the extra mile from like the hard work perspective, and I'm going to figure this out along the way. Like there's totally a way that you can build those skills and get actual tangible work from like the do-it-yourself model versus the like, you know, the opposite end of the spectrum where it's like you go to university for 2 or 4 years and try to prepare all of this time to one day get a job. It's like, there's no one stopping you from saying, like, there's no gatekeeper saying you cannot work on business products with, you know, design elements and drawing rectangles. Like, you can go do that. It's going to be a rocky road and it's going to be challenging and you're going to have lots of ups and downs, but like, there's nothing, this is not like pharmacy work where there's big prohibitions to lay people going and doing these things. So it really depends on how you're hardwired and in kind of what your lifestyle looks like. Maybe you've got a ton of extra time that you can put into it, or maybe you have a family that you really need to be specific about the time you spend. You need to get the most bang for your buck, and whatever the case may be. So I think a lot of this is just taking, you know, that personal intake of like, what are my strengths? What are my skills? What is my life situation? And how can I, you know, do this? Maybe I want to just do this night on the weekends for a few years and I have a good job I like now. And, you know, your long-term goal is to get into UX, but if you don't get into it for a few years, who cares? Like, it's fine.
Right.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, it's all about passion, right? It's all about the passion you have for the field. And if, you know, UX is a calling, like, try it. See if it even works out for you, right? And DIY for a little while and see, you know, is that something that I'm even passionate about or not? Because, you know, like, the passion factor is huge. We see a lot of graphic designers losing passion for their job. Like, that's like a lot of them talking to us. They always tell us, you know, like, I always get clients. They always rush the project. They always want to pay me less. They always tell me some weird things like, yo, make the logo bigger or make the text way bigger. Right? All these funky things. You know, like, oh my gosh, they're destroying my designs live and I have to obey to this because they're the clients anyway. And it's just like this weird feeling and they slowly lose passion, right? And so that's the thing is like for, you know, whatever you do, if it's UX, if it's UI, whatever it is, it's like is there that passion coming back when you try, you know, DIYing your way into UX or UI, whatever it is? Like, do you feel like that sense of ownership, that sense of challenge coming back in your career? And if so, that's a good marker that, hey, you probably want to investigate further and keep doing what you're doing. And if you actually end up, you know, knowing for a fact that this is something you want to do, then, you know, you can choose to keep going on and keep doing your DIY, or can be like, you know what? It's a lot of work. It's a lot of strategy that goes behind all this stuff. I'm going to pay a university or I'm going to pay a bootcamp and fast track my success, or try to ensure my success, you know, because fast tracking with university doesn't really work because it's going to take like 2 to 4 years. But you know what I mean? So at the center is very much the passion for the field and if it's alive or not, like that will dictate whether or not you'll be successful, because UX is trendy. And that's a problem because we see a lot of people trying to get into UX because it's a trendy thing, but that's not enough. It's not going to sustain your career over the long term. And we discourage people from getting into UX just for the trend factor. They need to do it because, you know, they feel a strong passion for it. They feel like it's going to help users. It's going to help the business. It's usually a much deeper why than just trends and money.
For sure. And one thing I wanted to, earlier you asked Seth and me, but we kind of went down like the path of, you know, universities, DIY, boot camps, all that stuff. One other thing I wanted to add to the boot camp con that I forgot was, you know, we talked about the fact that they work on the same projects. The other piece was the fact that their portfolio, they don't spend much time on portfolios. And so you can tell a boot camp portfolio from a mile away. Everyone can, because they don't spend much time providing feedback on them. They're using the same projects. There's a lot of different reasons. But the other piece that we didn't get to on that I wanted to tap into is like, what about our program and what we do differently? And that way, like, shed some light on what we recommend other people to do if they want to know themselves or they feel like joining us, great, the pressure. But essentially, what we have our students do is we have a 24-week program. It's called UX UI Expert. And essentially what happens is from start to finish, students build 2 of their own unique case studies that are like entirely their own. They follow the entire UX process twice, from research all the way to visual design and handoff. Some of our students work with real clients, so we do it on conceptual projects. All of them are real business use cases, like business problems that need to be solved, and we help them pick those things. But essentially, they solve 2 back to back. So one, they go through the first project in roughly 3.5-ish months, and then the next project they spend 6 weeks on. Because they've already done it once, so it's a matter of just putting in the reps to kind of build those UX muscles and understand what's going on. And then after that, we spend the last portion of the program, which is roughly another 6 weeks or so, on building a portfolio and understanding how to land a job. And so like the, and the big difference throughout the entire thing from us versus others is A, they're working with us the entire time and like they're getting feedback from us the entire time. And B, like they're working on their own unique case studies that they actually care about that like help them to keep their like accountability up. But also then we have, you know, mentorship that we provide one-on-one throughout the entire experience. So we meet together as a cohort on Mondays or Tuesdays, depending on the, which one you sign up for. And then essentially every other week, we meet with our students one-on-one to make sure that they're feeling like they're getting everything they need. So they meet either with Ludovic or myself. And we're going through all of what they're doing and answering all their questions and making sure they're feeling confident in their work. And so, yeah, long story short, though, is like that model can be applied to anyone. It doesn't matter if you're joining us or not. Like you, if you're doing it yourself, that's what I recommend, is like essentially starting by picking two cases that you're going to work on, put like spend a lot more time on the first one so you understand what you're doing. And then on the second one, you know, spend a little bit less time, give yourself more constraints, and then try and do the exact same thing for a very similar problem. And then work on your portfolio.
Yeah, that's really good. Do you guys feel like it's easier or harder to get hired for particular specialties within UX? Like, is it easier to break into the space from more of a UI perspective, visual design perspective, or easier to break into the space from a research perspective?
I see it from multiple ways. I think the easiest way to get in is as a generalist, but a generalist that can do every piece of that. And you might have a focus on one of those things, but the reason it is, that's the case, at least in my opinion, is because so many small to medium businesses don't have enough people to hire specialists. And so like, they can't hire an information architect who's only doing that. They can't hire a user researcher who's only doing that. They don't have the money for it. And so because of that, if you're someone who can do everything across the board, and that means that you're more likely to land your job with a smaller company who won't pay you as much and won't give you as many stock options and whatnot, all that stuff. That's fine, though, because you're going to get your feet really, really dirty with all the stuff that you're going to be doing. It's going to be like you'll get forged through the hellfires at the startup. But because of that, you'll like become so much stronger as a UX designer. And so I actually don't think that specializing in that way is the way to get in. It's more like having like talking about what you prefer is good. But I think more of the specialty lies in what you're targeting. So it's like you say, I'm a UX designer who targets this type of company or this type of work. Like that, I think is far more like helpful and allows you to get the job faster than it would otherwise.
That makes sense. And you know, at the end of the day, it's very much something that you grow in your career. It's not like when you first start, you need to be generalist. There is no other way. You have to understand research. You have to understand IA. You have to understand prototyping, usability testing. Like there is no shortcut. You have to know all these things and you have to train those. So as an entry level person, you have to get there. So that's number one. And then number two, like, you know, your career isn't fixed. Like everyone can create their own specialty within UX, you know, as the years go by, right? So for example, when I started, I was a journalist and slowly over time, I went into design systems because I loved it. But that took a few years, you know, of understanding the UX process, see what I like the most, what I didn't like as much and why. And slowly you start making up your own mind and be like, you know what? I want to, now that I'm good at the general UX stuff, no, well, let's add some, you know, like some more specificity here and there. And that's how you grow in your career and you slowly start to position yourself differently because you start realizing what you like and what you don't like in UX and you start to have a better vision of who you are as a UX designer, right? But that only takes time. And yeah, obviously it's all about being a generalist at first. But like we mentioned earlier in this podcast, the thing that's important is, you know, you can niche down in many other ways than just, you know, the UX process. So you can niche down in the company, the industry, the platform, all kinds of things.
Very cool. You know, thinking about someone trying to get into the field, getting into their first job as they're evaluating companies, cultures, workplaces, looking back over your careers, are there any red flags or I guess you could say green flags or good things that people should keep an eye out for that when they're interviewing or looking for companies that might not be obvious to someone getting their first job, but you would, you know, warn about having been in the industry for so long?
Yeah, it all starts with the job description, right? And if you feel like the job description is all over the place, well, it's probably a red flag. You don't want to apply to a graphic slash UI slash UX design job. Like, that's not going to go anywhere. You're going to be doing a little bit of everything and a lot of nothing, right? So first of all, is the job title, does it say UX designer or product designer, or does it say all kind of things? That's number one. Then if you feel like it's doing a good job at, you know, being clear at what they're looking for, then is the job description. And in the job description, are you asked to do some marketing assets on the side, or are you just asked to do UX, right? Because you might see a UX designer role and in which they ask for some things that sound like very wildly different compared to what a UX designer would do on a daily basis. And so that's another red flag. And, you know, if you feel like, you know, it's 80% there and it's a fairly good job description, job title, then it's all about asking those questions during the interview process, because it's two ways. A lot of candidates keep forgetting that it's not just them looking for a job. It's, you know, it's like also a hiring manager trying to find the right person, but it's both ways. It's a two-way avenue. And so asking those questions, challenging the hiring manager, I mean, challenging nicely the hiring manager, making sure that you, ask the questions that are on the back of your mind, because oftentimes we have some questions and we don't, you know, dare to ask them. But then later on, we like, ah, gosh, like I had a hunch, I had a feeling that the UX process wasn't as well, as mature as I was expecting it to be. I wish I asked those questions, right? So by asking those questions up front, it can help you to identify those red flags, right? Because they will not be always obvious. So that's the typical thing, job description, job title, asking those questions if you're in doubt, and that should, you know, already set you up for success and remove a lot of the noise.
Yeah, you know, from my side of things, what I tell people to do is, first of all, check out Blind, see if there's anything on Blind about them. You might find out that the company, like, people are internally really, you know, they don't like it. You know, look at Glassdoor, see what the reviews are. You know, the thing is those places like that are going to surface like the most positive and the most negative. Usually in the middle, people don't talk. So some of it, you take the grain of salt. But at the same time, if you can see it just a message, then it's like, this place has a 30% rating on these places, then, like, you know, you don't want to be going there. Small stuff like that, I think you want to look up, because even though you might be getting an interview with a company, but and you're like, yes, I'm excited about this, there might be a reason that you're getting that interview as a junior for a senior position or whatever it is. They can't hold talent because they're a bad place to work. So you only got to be wary about that every so often. So you really want to be looking into how others are talking about the company, really see about that. The other side, which plays into what I just talked about, is company culture. So to whatever extent you can talk to other people in the company beforehand, you know, you can like reach out via LinkedIn. And what I typically recommend all of our students do essentially is you reach out by first, you know, say like, hi, and then the message you give is something that has to do with them, that offers value to them, and that you actually care about what they're doing in some way, whether or not, like, if they're a designer on the team, then you're going to their portfolio if they have one, and you're commenting on, you actually take the time to look through it and you say something thoughtful about what something they've done about their portfolio, or maybe they talk about what they've done on their LinkedIn job description, at which point you go to their product and see if you can find the section that they're talking about. And again, you make a thoughtful comment about something that they've done, because that makes them more likely to want to engage with you. But then, you know, you follow it up with your ask. You say, hi, my name is blah. And, you know, I'm currently interviewing or interested in this company with this position. I'd love to hear more about your experience with the company and whatnot. And so essentially, like, you're creating an informational interview with someone that allows you to ask them questions about what they think about the company culture and what they want to be hired for this position. And, like, if you talk to enough people, you're going to find out whether or not it's a good choice or not, because it'll come out from a couple of disgruntled people if they really are unhappy with it.
That's great advice. That's great advice. Well, guys, you guys have provided so much helpful information, and I'm super pumped about your platform and your course and how it's helping so many individuals. We'll hook up everything in the show notes for how to find you guys, how to find your platform and some of the blog posts that you mentioned. But yeah, wanted to give the floor to you all one more time before we sign off, and I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Seth. We're super stoked to be here. It's been great to get to know you better through this and talking to you previously. Yeah, like, love what you're doing with all your podcasts and, like, helping the community to learn about topics like this, because, you know, we talked all about how to get into UX if you don't know much, or like, you know, you're trying to, you know, find your way in. And really, like, most of the things you see out there are YouTube videos, people saying, like, you know, from $0 to $300,000, like, look at me, like, I'm a UX designer. And or like, I got in with zero experience after 3 months. And like, a lot of times, like, those, it's kind of a bogus story, or they're the exception to the rule, or they have a ton of prior experience that all applies. And so for most people, that doesn't happen. Like 99% of people, that doesn't happen. And there are other ways to do it. And like, finding podcasts like what you have, resources like what we have, and there's plenty of other places out there. Like, that's where you have to start. You have to start by doing the fundamentals. And like, the way I like to think about getting into UX, and in general, being confident as a UX designer, is like weight training. Essentially, you're building your UX muscles. Like, you're starting off as a weakling, and that's okay. Everyone starts somewhere. And the more that you try, you practice all the methods, the more you do all the things, the more you're building that, the strength in each of those areas. But you can't just focus on one thing if you want to be a generalist. If you have to, like, and you want to go down a path where you can do all of it. Like, you have to work on, you know, your leg muscles, your pecs, your shoulders, all of it, right? It's the same thing. That's why I like that metaphor, is because it applies the same way. Like, for weight training and UX, you got to be exercising those muscles. And again, I just appreciate that you're operating a platform for people to be learning those things.
Yeah. And like we said earlier, it's like, it all comes down to passion, right? So like, truly get into UX if you feel like that's something that you truly, truly passionate about. And, you know, you probably have some good reason as to why, you know, your current career isn't, you know, fulfilling anymore. And maybe just start from there, you know, like, why am I getting bored at my current job? Like, as a designer, as a graphic designer, whatever it is, like, try to understand what are the pointers, what are the things that, you know, like, you know, maybe not bore you, but like, that's pretty frustrating on a daily basis. And that analysis will help anyone in this audience try to pinpoint all the things that you can work against, right? And be like, well, all right, in what career would I be able to do less of this or more of that? And, you know, is UX the right answer? But assessing your current career as of right now, like, just takes, you know, like 30 minutes, think about it, get back to it as much as you can. But the key thing is, like, do you have fire every single day when you go to work, or do you dread it, right? And if you do dread it, then like, you have to assess your career. You have to try to figure out how you can change things around for yourself, because it's your career at the end of the day. It's not someone else's. It's not a job. It's a career, and you have to do something about it, and no one else but you will do something about it. So that's exactly what we're trying to do. And hopefully any graphic designers out there listening to this, and we know some of your pains for sure, like, if you feel this, don't keep going. Just try to fight for your career and just try to find that switch so that the passion comes back.
I wanted to just say, you know, there are scenarios where people think that they're in a bad situation with their current job and they're trying to run away from something to get into UX. And like, there's plenty of scenarios where you might not actually need to switch into UX if you think that's the right move. And so like, instead, I think like, the way I like to look at things is, I don't want to run away from something. I want to run towards something. And the main reason is, a lot of times the problems that you're experiencing in your current job, many times, even if you switch careers, you're going to experience very similar problems in your next job, even if they're very different. Like, a lot of times it's just, I feel like that's just the way the universe works. Like, you bring your problems. And so really evaluate if UX is the right move in the first place, because it might not. Maybe you love design. Maybe you're an awesome graphic designer and the problems that you're facing are specific to your company. Maybe they are like a problem with graphic design in general and you need to make a move. But the point is that you need to make that choice for yourself and learn if UX is right for you before deciding that it just is the right move to begin. Because essentially, you don't need wasting a bunch of effort running away from the thing that you love only to find out the thing that you're running towards is really not what you want.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for the advice. This has been awesome, and look forward to seeing your platform flourish and where you guys go from here.
Thank you, Seth.
Thank you.
Vice versa.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us today on the Product Design Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, be sure and go follow our guests. Let them know they did a great job and you learned a lot. More to come in the following weeks as we bring on new guests. Please hit that subscribe button so that you will get these podcasts and learn a ton about the product design community. Excited to see you next time. Thanks.